tell how you broke into baseball, where and when, and in the minor leagues, and where
you mean through the, I mean, not semi-pro.
Well, yeah, even
well, semi-pro. Well, I played too. Maybe they come over here to look me over.
Tell me just where you grew up and how.
I grew up in City South Bend, right here. I was born on Cherry Street over there. I'm raised on Chestnut over here.
I see.
Of course, after I married and played ball, I lived in different places, but my folks here lived here since 1916. See.
Nice.
And then after they died, I inherited the home. That was my oldest brother that you saw now. He's 77.
I see.
And we inherited the home, so we're here ever since 19 when I quit playing ball in 43. So there's no place like home, you know, of course. The neighborhood kind of deteriorated a little bit, but I mean, other than that.
When did your parents move here?
To America? They came here in 1892, but they met here. And they married in 1895, and my oldest brother was born in 1897. Right down Cherry Street.
You were born in 1907.
I was born in 1907. Yeah, I was born 10 years
I
later.
I checked the record book. Now, where did they come from in Poland? Were they coming from?
Yeah, they come from Poland. Yeah.
And
I'd have to think of the towns. I can't recall the name of the little villages now. Although mother, she was a maid. It wasn't from the German side. You know, Poland was divided between half Russian and half Polish, and they were from the German side of Poland. And she was like a housemaid, I guess, in Berlin apartments. You know, or. The rich people had him for apartments. Daddy, he skipped just before Kaiser got him into the army. So he was 18, I guess, or 19 when he skipped. But he had a brother here in Milwaukee already that probably brought him in, you know. And just before Kaiser was going to get him into service, which was forced then, you know. And just kind of working, he took off over here because his brother was
Let's
out here.
Let's just check on.
I got the name of the little town, huh?
Slupsa,
yeah, the name of the town was Slupsa.
Slupsa,
yeah. Nice. And it's in the eastern part of Poland. I mean, the western part of Poland.
Did you speak Polish at home?
Oh, yes, I do, sure.
And you speak Polish?
I went to Polish school for 8 years.
Oh,
had Polish catechism, Polish history, Polish religion. Speak it right.
Here in South Bend?
Oh, yes, sir. St. Hedwig's Parish, right over here, about 15-minute walk from here. Still belong to the same parish. After the war, I had some of my cousins, right, that's after the First World War, right over here, you know, I was about 12, 13 years old, but this must have been in the 20s, and they wrote in German, you know, and nobody could, father forgot the German already, you know, mother couldn't, they could probably speak it, but they couldn't read it, you know, write it, so I went and got it interpreted, you know, and I wrote them back in Polish, you know, and they wrote back and says, how can somebody born in this country learn to write so well in Polish? And, you know, I said, well, I learned it in school. I learned my ABCs in English and Polish both. So I can speak both languages. There's a few words that you don't use too often, you probably can't recall, you know, because it's like somebody asked me the other day, how do you say plumber in Polish, you know? He's in Poland. There was no plumbers in Poland, you know. So we looked it up in the Polish book, and it's like a Polish, English version of it, plumber, but it's spelled different, you know. And then Olovnik is one of them, see? But you don't use that kind of language around here, you know, because you don't have the use for it.
Did you ever get back to Poland?
No, I never went to Poland. I was born here. I never went back. I never had no desire. I asked my daddy why he never went back to Poland. He said, son, he says, the reason I left Poland because there was nothing there for me, just that they were like sharecroppers, more or less, you know? And he said, there was no future for me there, so I took off. He said, I just never had no desire to go back. Under the conditions they had then, of course, maybe it was better now, but those days they didn't have nothing there. They had the lords, you know, the landlords, or whatever you want to call them, sharecroppers, all they were, and they just got a pig and a cow and just made a living, that's all.
But you play baseball? When did your baseball skills
develop? Right over here in the field. We didn't have nothing else to do. We didn't have no bicycles, we didn't have no roller skates, we didn't have nothing, couldn't afford them, so there's a lot of open fields over here. We played ball in the morning, in the afternoon, and the evenings. That's all there was to do. There was nothing else to do. Now the kids, what they do? They got automobiles, they got bicycles.
In trouble.
Then they get in trouble, that's true. But that's all we had to do was play. I mean, some of them developed more than others, but I mean, at least each neighborhood had a team, more or less. And one gang would play the other, that's all.
Did you have an early desire to make the big leagues?
Well, after I got the semi-pro ball, yes, I did.
And when did this happen?
This was, well, I was about 15, 16 years old. I was 16 years old. I just went through the eighth grade. I didn't go to high school because they needed home, you know, for money at home. After all, there was the end of us children. daddy only working, or two brothers working, they was married. So when I was 16 years old, I started working. And then I was playing ball for Studebakers. And we played a lot of summer pro then, because all around South Bend, the town was 30, 40, 50 miles away, every one of them had a team, you know. Now they don't, but I mean, at them days, they did. They'd jump in the car and ride on gravel roads, you know, half an hour, and played ball and came back, maybe made yourself a $5 bill. And that was your spending money. You didn't get no spending money out of your paycheck. And then later on, we played exhibition games against Philadelphia, Ty Cobb. When Ty Cobb was in Philadelphia in the 1927-28 in that area. Mm-hmm. Connie Mack brought his team down here. My old manager, Jimmy Dykes, he played an exhibition game right here. And I seen Babe Ruth previous to that, when Babe Ruth was the Yankees. He played exhibition games after World Series. Mm-hmm. And that was my desire. And I had pretty good luck stroking the ball. I hit the ball pretty good, you know, I played the outfield. I didn't want to play the infield. There was too many bad hops in the infield on these fields over here, you know. So I was an outfielder, and I hit the ball real good. And somebody in Indianapolis got nosy about it, or found out about it, and come down here and looked me up. But the year previous to that, we had a man over here, he was like a scout, more or less, from Mishawaka. He signed me up to a contract for the St. Louis Cards to send me to Danville in a 3I league. That was in 27, I believe it was, in 28, because I got married in 28, and I was supposed to go in 29, spring training, and I didn't, my wife didn't want me to go because the baby was coming up. She said, I'd rather have you around, you know. So I didn't report spring training in 1929 to Danville. So June 1921, baby was born, and this man come here from Indianapolis, an Indianapolis scout, to watch me play against Donnie Bush's Pittsburgh Pirates. And Donnie Bush comes in and he says, Ollie Bama, who's Ollie Bama? He's in uniform. He said, we can't play him. See, I was turned into Judge Landis, and I was on a blacklist. See, I was on the blacklist because I didn't report to the St. Louis Cardinals farm team in Danville. I never gave it a thought. I didn't know nothing about it. I just didn't report to my wife. Didn't want me to go, so I didn't go. And then the following day, I said, well, we'll go to my wife. Ask my wife. We watched the ball game together, sitting in the grandstand. That's where he found me. Instead of playing, I was sitting in the grandstand watching the game. And after the game, we drove to my home. And we asked my wife, and my wife, she consented. She says, okay. So the following day, 6 o'clock in the morning, I take off, we go to Indianapolis. And I tried out over there, and they signed me to a contract over there, but I had to get my release from Danville. What they paid for it, I don't know. They must have paid something. If I was good enough to start in double-A ball, they must have given some money. I don't know how much. It was none of my business. I didn't get any of it myself. But they signed me to a contract, so I stayed with them.
What year was this?
1929.
Signed with the Indianapolis
Indians.
First professional contract.
Well, right. The first contract I signed was with Danville, but I didn't report. Yeah, yeah. See? But I was still tied down to the professional ball. So I finished 29 with the Indianapolis as an outfielder. And 30, somebody got hurt in Quincy Illinois, their farm team, in May, I guess, or something like that, about a month after the season started. And I was sent down there, and they made an infielder out of me on there, because the second baseman, or shortstop, got hurt, and the second baseman went to play short, and they made the second baseman out of me. And I had some pretty good years. Edson Greenberg was playing with Evansville, and the Walker brothers were playing with Evansville, Gerald Walker and Hubby Walker. And Tommy Bridges was doing the pitching for him then, of course. It was all coming up to, you know, coming through Class B ball. That was, the 3I league was Class B ball then. See, now they don't have those kind of leagues anymore. You used to have them all the way down to D ball. That's where you learned your fundamentals. From there, if it was good enough, you moved up every year, see. Now they don't have it. Now I guess they go out of college now. But them days, now if you don't go to college, I don't think there's much of a chance for you to get into professional baseball, unless you're an exception. Yeah. Because there is the more minors for you to come up. So that was 1930. And I stayed there in 30 and 31. I had a good year in 32. They had 340 something, and the St. Louis Browns bought me. So 33, they sent me to San Antonio, Texas. Well, Wichita Falls, Texas, rather. And it was Texas League then. And from there, Wichita Falls pulled out and went to Longview, Texas. That was when they hit oil. It was one of the largest oil fields in America at that time. And Shreveport pulled out, and they went to Tyler, and Wichita Falls pulled out, and they went to Longview. That was town was about 12,000, but nothing but oil fields, see. And they really supported us. I hit the first home run in Tyler in a new ballpark. They started passing the hat around, but that was on the opposing team, and they quit passing around. But I was the visiting team. I was from Longview. It was about maybe 15, 20 miles apart or so. So I lost out on the pass of the hat because I was from the opposing team. And then we finished up in Longview, and then that was 34, I got called up. That was the St. Louis Browns and the Hornsmen, 34, 5, and 6. I went up with Harlan Clift. He and I were roommates. He and I went up from
Walla Walla.
Well, that's right. Oh, no, from Yakima, Washington. Yeah, Harlan's from Yakima, Washington. We used to walk up and down Broadway, and they had them cherries from there, and they had them apples from there, you know. That was Yakima Valley. And I said, my God. So he sent me a bushel of apples one time. It cost me more for the freight than the apples were worth. That's about 2,500 miles of it. But they were delicious, boy. They're real good. And that was 36. And then 36 and 37, I went back to San Antonio. St. Louis Browns sent me back to San Antonio. And I had a good year there. And St. Paul bought me in 38. I went to 38. That's when Mr. Schultz, I was in Peanuts. Did you know that?
You were what?
I was in Peanuts. Mr. Are Schultz, you? I was in Peanuts.
Oh.
You
want
to stop that? I'll show you.
Yeah. Stop it, Gene, so we can see this. Oh.
I just saw a man over here in the tavern the other day. He's from Phoenix, Arizona. He said he saw it, wasn't it?
That'd be great.
So he and I talked for about 20 minutes, like I say, and he was telling me that he was 16 years old, and I was his hero. I was having a good year. See, I had a real good year. And in fact, I was chosen the most valuable player. Quentin Wyatt and I was the most valuable player.
What year was this? No,
1938.
38 in the American Association?
American Association, yeah. So we talked for about 20 minutes, and he was talking about, he said he still has my little autograph bat, my little autograph on it, you know. And he said he can still remember the night that he bought the bat. He still did. And we had quite a chat. And he said, I got 12 grandchildren, and each one got a separate character, you know, as souvenirs. Signed by him, and you couldn't get that away from them for $1,000 a piece. So, that was in 38. Are we still on?
Yeah.
I was in 38, then I had a good year, and the White Sox bought me. So I went to the White Sox in 39, and I played with the White Sox in 39, and I hit, I think it was 251, something like that. And it didn't seem like it was good enough, so they sent me back to St. Paul. So I was in St. Paul in 40. In 41, and in 42 they sold me to San Francisco, Pacific Coast League. I played for Lefty O'Doul over there, and that was a real good league. We played night ball, and on Sundays you'd play doubleheaders, you wouldn't play on Monday. Of course, you had to travel from Seattle all the way down to San Diego, it was all down the coast, and you had an off day. And then that was during the war, my family wouldn't go out there, because they thought the Japs had the coast already, although they did bomb it there one time on some oil field outside of Los Angeles there somewhere. And I told them I wouldn't come back. In fact, I can't recall the guy's name. He owned the Giants before the Giants went to San Francisco. Now, you know, the Giants in New York. I can't think of it. Stoneman, was it Stoneman? Yeah, he owned San Francisco. That was their farm team. And he says, Ollie, he says, you go home for a week. He says, you think that would break the monotony? My boy was about 2 years old then. I said, I think it would. So he paid the expenses, he paid my wages. Instead of going home for a week, I was here for 2 weeks, right during the July season. Because, you know, ball players, I was, at that time, I was, 34, 35, you know. They had me too old to go to the service because I had three children. And the kids were, good, you know, now they were grabbing them into service. There wasn't too many kids coming up. So they were kind of short for ball players, so they were trying to hang out here, you know. So I got a 2 weeks vacation, which was very unusual. But they said, there you go home, and I did go home. I met them after 2 weeks, and the following year I said, I'm not coming back because I don't want to go live a life like I did. So they traded me off to the Buffalo International League. And I played there for Greg Malevi, the old White Sox shortstop. He was the manager down there. And we played... Well, it was Syracuse, Buffalo, Rochester, well, Montreal, and so was
Toronto.
Toronto was in it too. So, first time I played ball in Montreal, I was leadoff man, and they start announcing the lineups, I guess, and they called my name, and he says, Ollie Beamer, he said, Dujambu, you know. I said, my God, I got out of the batter's box. I said, what did he say? And the catcher said, well, it's second base. So he says, I says, what's the rest of the lineup? He says, well, Premier Boo is first base, Dujambu is second base, Hari Koo is the shortstop, and Trawajan Boo is the third baseman. And the Lazar is the pitcher, and the Recever is the catcher. And Arbeet was the umpire. I can't recall the outfielder anymore because that's too long ago. But I can remember it. I'll never forget. I like to die when I heard them announcing those different lineups. I think they still do it in the big leagues. I mean, they announce in French. Yeah, in English sport.
So after,
I guess they do, yeah. So after I was the 43, and then I said to the wife, I said, I think I'm going to give it up. That was during the war, you know, the war was still going on. I said, hell, I can get a job over here. What's the use to travel around? They couldn't come see me. When they did come see me, they're supposed to take a 10 o'clock train, you know, I was home for 2 weeks. There's only 400 some miles from South Bend, you know. But the 10 o'clock train going home, you couldn't get on, full of soldiers. 12 o'clock train full of soldiers, 2 o'clock in the morning before her and the baby would get on to come home, you know. And that was a dog's life too, although I get a chance to see him, you know, I'd go on the road for 2-3 weeks, then come home for 2-3 weeks. But that was better than San Francisco, because I wouldn't see him at all there. So I decided to quit. And here Buffalo in the meantime traded me off to Portland, Oregon. My old teammate, Marvin Owen, was managing the ball club over there, and I still got my last contract in the drawer. And I got my release about 10 years after that, before I got my release. So that was the extent of my baseball career as far as professional ball is concerned.
Fascinating. Who, you broke in with the, when you went
Indians.
Down to Wichita, Longview.
Longview, yeah.
Who was your manager down there?
Hank Severide, the old St. Louis Brown catcher.
Catcher, yeah.
Henry Severide, that's right.
And all you played under how many different managers?
I played, stop and think. Bruno Bethel was in Indianapolis. And Quincy Illinois was first baseman. I can't recall his name right now. But then I went to Hank Severide in the Texas League. Then I went back in the Texas League when the St. Louis Browns bought me Hornsby. I was under Hornsby for 3 years.
What was Hornsby like as a manager? As a manager,
he was hard to play ball for. He thought everybody was as good a hitter as he was, you know, see. And he'd have you take his strikes. You take strikes in the big leagues, you got to be a pretty good hitter because them pitchers, they get ahead of you and they can go to work on you, you know. And most good hitters, they don't take strikes. They take them three swings, you know. And I'll never forget, especially when we're behind, you always have to take a strike. He wants to get a base on ball or something. I'll never forget a rookie come up and he told the kid to take the first strike, you know, see? So the kid goes up there, he said, well, in other words, he said, take one, you know, take one. That meant take the first strike. So the kid went up there, he swung at the first one, he fouled it off. And he took the next two right down the middle, see? So he says, how come you didn't swing at those two? He says, well, you told me to take one, see? So I took two. So he didn't stay long, he was gone. That's the Hank Severide. Like I say, I played in Hornsby for 3 years. Then I went back to the Texas League, and there's a catcher, an old-time catcher there, too. He used to play with the Cubs. I can't recall his name right now. Zach Taylor.
Oh.
Zach Taylor, old Zach Taylor was a catcher there. I mean, he still caught for us, you know, once in a while. And then from there, I went to St. Paul, and Dave, can't recall his name now either. But from there I went to Chicago. Chicago was Jimmy Dykes.
How'd you like Jimmy Dykes?
Jimmy Dykes? Oh, entirely different. Oh, he was entirely different.
What technique did
here's Hornsby, the difference between Hornsby and him. Hornsby, as soon as you got in the clubhouse, you was under tension. You couldn't smoke, you couldn't read newspapers, you couldn't do nothing. When you got in that clubhouse, you never lost a ball in the clubhouse. Never lost a ball game in the clubhouse. But you was under tension at all times. Dykes, Luke Appling would come in every day. He'd go to his office and tell him, I don't think I can make it. I don't think I can make it. That's why they call them aches and pains. I don't think I'll be able to play today. He says, and Dykes says to him, he says, you know, Luke, he says, some day he says, you're really going to be sick. And he says, nobody's going to believe you and you're going to die. You always come in. And you play cards and relax all the time.
Cigars, probably.
Him, yeah, all the time, yeah. Him and then the pitcher. Knuckleball pitcher. Ted Lyons. All the time sparring around, you know, half dressed, you know, sparring around, knocking a cigar out of one another's mouth. And a lot of fun.
Good, so, happy.
On, that's right. Yeah. And on the field, that's a horse another color. It was business. It's all strictly business.
You think Dykes' method was best?
I thought so. Yeah. He was more relaxed.
He was managed relaxed. Longer than horse.
Oh, yes, he did, yeah. He went traveling from place to place. And
maybe great ball players don't make good men.
Maybe they
because
don't.
Because
they're
so
true.
Good.
And, you know, Raj liked to play the horses, too, you know. Sometimes you see in the morning, he wouldn't even speak to you. You know what I mean? Like his mind was a blank or something like that. We always said that's when he lost, you know. And then when he was a lot of fun, well, that seems like that's the only one he won.
How did he get away with this?
I don't know how he did. I used to bet money for him in spring training when he was in West Palm Beach. He'd give me the money, and I'd go bet on him. He'd bet $100, I'd bet a buck. But some of his horses come in second and third. He's always betting them on the nose. I bet him a dollar across the board. But that was his hobby, I guess. Of course, that had kept him broke, I guess. But on the ball field, he was rough.
Who were some of your teammates with the Browns?
With the Browns? Well, I
mentioned Cliff.
Harlan Cliff was one of them, yeah. And Sammy West was another one. He played center field. And Hobo Hemsley, if you recall, Raleigh Hemsley, he was our catcher.
Tell me a little bit about Hemsley and his private.
Well, yeah, he was a character. He and I went to Philadelphia. We were in Philadelphia, and we went out for the evening. We had a few beers. We went different places. We come home about 11:45. They were checking us in, you know. Next morning, I get up and read the paper for breakfast at 9:00, and here's Hemsley's in jail. I said, how the dickens did he get in jail? He come home with me, see? So he got out that night. He went out the back fire escape there somewhere. He got out. Went and got himself and rent a car or something, and he didn't have a Pennsylvania driver's license, didn't have no driver's license at all, I guess, and he got himself jacked up a little bit, I guess, and he got into a spot where there was a bunch of Navy boys, and they worked him over a little bit. And I still don't know how he got out, but he got out, that's how he told me he got out. And the time that he caught, I couldn't understand how he caught, and he says, well, by the third or fourth inning, he'd sweat it out, you know. And of course, there was all day ball them days, you know. But I never saw the man drunk myself, to tell you the truth.
But, did you say checked in? Did you have a bed check?
Oh yes, yeah, at midnight. Oh yes.
And where was this? With the Browns?
Yeah, it was St. Louis Browns, yeah.
Barnsby do this?
Oh yeah. Well, all big leagues had that. Of course, later on you had lights, you know, and under the lights you had 2:00, see? Yeah, everybody didn't have lights them days.
Did Dykes have a bed check?
Yeah, he had a bed check at 12:00. Yeah. At 2:00 at night game, you played night ball, you know. You played 2:00. I remember in the Texas League, we played Fort Worth a doubleheader, and it's supposed to be 9-7, see? So we started out with 17 and 10, 2:10 in the morning when we finished up a doubleheader. And Tony Kubek's father, you remember Tony Kubek? Well, Tony Kubek's father, he's Milwaukee, and Jack Closa, they joined us that day. Jack Closa had 2 triples, only 2 hits, I got about 13, 14 times at bat, and both of them won the ball game. I'll never forget that. Yeah, I played ball with Tony Kubek's dad. Well, his name was Tony, too.
I didn't realize he played
that. Yeah, he played ball. He never got in the big leagues, but he played. Well, his home was Milwaukee, too.
Jim Levy with you down
there? No, Jim was there ahead of me. Jim was there ahead of me, you know. And Sammy West. Then we had Moose Sollers. Moose Sollers is blind now, I guess somebody says, outside of Pittsburgh. He was a big boy. Sammy West. And we had a boy out of Chicago. I can't recall his name yet. And we had a great big sign in right field in Sportsman's Park, and he wasn't too graceful as an outfielder. And the Yankees had the bases full, and I would call him, he'd dick you, somebody hit a fly ball, and he charged in on it, and he overran it, and he started backing up. He was backing up faster than he was coming in. And on that sign in the right field was a chic sign, a man was shaving his face, you know. And he hit, you could hear it all over the ballpark when he backed into that wall, see. So the ball, that's the first time I ever seen Hornsby laugh. With the bases full, like 2 outs, everybody's running. So he didn't get the ball. And the ball come back to the infield. And he come in, he got the ball, he's throwing the base runner out at third base. He threw the ball on a flyer into the dugout where Hornsby was sitting. Hornsby took off, you know. He went to the in a tunnel down there, and he come back out laughing. He said, "What the hell? What's going to happen next?" You know. And after we got the side out, we talked to Bruce Campbell. The following year, well, he had something happen to his body. Something happened to his body, and he come back. He was voted the most
comeback
player of the year. That's right. But anyway, he asked Bruce, "You hurt yourself?" He said, "Oh, I don't think so." He took his cap off and run his hand through his hair, come up with a handful of blood. He said, "I'll be a son of a gun. That guy with that razor must have nicked me," he says. It's like that.
That's Campbell said that.
Bruce Campbell said that. Those are the things you can't forget, you know.
What was the funniest thing ever? Would that rank among them?
That would be one of them. Well, it's funny, you know, when you're stealing third base with a bat on third base, it's very funny, but it's funny when you get up there and look at it. I did that once. Well, I seen it happen several times. And I seen,
describe this again.
When you're on second base, you hit the ground ball, and he's on second base. And maybe the shortstop or third base, whoever fields the ball, throws it away at first. You go from home plate all the way to second, then he goes from second base to third base. Unknowingly, you know, the pitcher goes into a windup, you know. What's he doing winding up? So you're taking off, right? But you don't know the guy's on third. You figure, geez, if I can go from home to second, he should go from second to home when the ball was thrown in the right field. But he probably, after the ball was fielded, he probably went back to second, you know, thinking they're going to pick him off or something. And by the time he gets going, find out the ball's thrown in the right field, he can't go any further than third. But here I'm running, and I thought the guy scored, see. Because the pitcher goes into his windup, and I'm taking off. I said, "What's he winding up for? I'm taking off." Like, but that only happens once, you know, that's how you learn. I've seen it happen several times.
What do you say about that?
Nothing. Get out of here for making mistakes, mental mistakes more for than mechanical, you know what I mean? If you do the wrong thing, like you run on a fly ball, you say, "What you doing running on a fly ball?" He said, "Well, I thought it was two outs." He says, "You don't think, I'll do the thinking." Because about errors like this, we drop balls. Well, that's the only hit. Anybody that played the game knows he dropped balls, or he threw balls away, or he kicked balls away. Mm-hmm. But mental error, that means your mind isn't on the game or something, you know. And I seen two guys, that was a Texas League, Bo Bell was one. And Tony, whatever his name was, I can't recall, but they was playing for Galveston. I was with San Antonio, and I can't recall this guy. Oh, Pit Purdy. He was quite a ball player for Beloit. You know, he's with somebody, too, for a while, playing big league, but this was on his way down. But he played with Beloit Wisconsin College against Notre Dame. He was quite a drop kicker in the 20s, you know, somewhere in there. And Pitt hit the ball, line drive to center field, between center and right, rather, and these two guys ran into one another, and they knocked themselves out. Tony Governor and Bo Bell, that's what, Tony Governor played center field, and Bo Bell played right for them. That was 1932, somewhere in there, see. And he got a home run, because it was both later, before the second baseman went out and got the ball, Pitt ran all the way around. That was the most sorriest thing I ever saw, because they carried them both off on stretchers. Some of the funny things, you have to stop and think some of the funny things that have happened, you know.
I mean, old ball players talking, you hear some of the craziest stories.
Oh, it's the truth.
Wonderful.
That's right.
It must be
it was quite a career. Like I say, we didn't make much money them days because, guys in the shop didn't make much money either. You know, that was during the Depression when I started, 29, you know, 30 and 31. But I always managed to make it go. I just have to get into bread lines like a lot of guys did, you know, working in a shop.
Do you have a favorite pitcher to hit against in the Big Ten?
Whoo! Not hardly a favorite, but I like to bat against left-handers. And I was the first guy that Robert Feller ever faced in 1936 in St. Louis. No. When he first come from Des Moines or somebody had him, that's when they had that little controversy. Yeah. Who owns him? And I guess Cleveland had to pay so much money to get him.
They almost lost him.
Yeah, I know it. And then I forget, he had a man on first base and second base, and he looked the man up. You know, there was five runs behind or something like that. It's a good time to, you know, break a rookie in, see. So they put him in, put Bob in, and the guy they took out was Pat Malone. He was with you guys for a while. 1936, I guess it was, see. Well, he was just with you for a while. Well, they took Pat out, and they put Rapid Robert in, see. And he just looked at the base on the back, you know, at second base and fired, and he missed the catcher, missed me, hit the grandstand. The grandstand just shook. Man, did that guy throw. Next boy does the same thing. I managed to get a base on balls off of him.
How did you feel after that first
pitch? Jeez, I don't know whether to swing, duck, or what to do. But the first time he started against us, I'll never forget, that was in Cleveland, maybe a month or two later. And he struck out 16 of us, I guess. He got everybody but Harlan Clift. And Harlan Clift made some kind of remark to the newspapers, you know, something about the sports, right? Well, he didn't get everybody, but he didn't get me. So next time he started against us, he got Harlan Clift three different times. I don't ever forget that.
He didn't say much after that.
No, he didn't say much, but he was terrific. I know this is 39, we was in the White Sox. The guy could really hit Robert. Well, Robert, I read stories where Robert himself admitted, Rip Radcliffe, because he slapped at the ball. He just slapped at the ball. He didn't swing, he slapped. Anybody, the harder you swung, the harder it was to hit him, you know. He just slapped at that ball. See, he hit him pretty good. But Dykes would say, don't swing at his curveball, you know. Well, his curveball was as fast as his fastball, and it dropped, you know. So everybody come back, but I thought it was his fastball, because it was, you know. It got so far, all of a sudden it dipped. It wasn't a slow roundhouse like some guys threw, you know. This one is like a fastball, and just dropped out of sight. But he was terrific.
Who was your best pitcher with the Browns?
Best pitcher? Well, Bobo Newsom was our best pitcher. I mean, you remember
Bobo. About Bobo.
Yeah,
Bobo. All kinds of stories about him, I guess.
Bobo, he's a dandy. Well, I'll tell you a story about Hemsley again. And, Bobo, I'll tell you this one about Buck. In Detroit, we could get beer, go through the restaurant. If you know, Harlan Clift and I always sign. One day we'd have a bottle of beer apiece, you know, and we sign.
Where'd you have to sign?
Yeah, it's like a check, you know. So we wouldn't pay for it. The bellhop would bring it up, would sign.
The ball club picked it up?
The ball club wasn't supposed to pick it up, but they were picking it up because in Detroit, at the Book Cadillac, it was going through the kitchen as a part of the meal, see? Otherwise, when you had your clothes cleaned or you had washing or anything like that, that was all extras. See, all extras. Then you took care, when you were checking out of the hotel, you'd go to the desk and ask for your extras. So we had two bottles one day, two bottles the next day, you know. And there was no extra, see? And we'd go to bed at night, right above us, there was, about 11 o'clock, there was noise going on. You know, we looked up and there was Hemsley and Buck and those guys having a lot of fun up there, see? And they were bringing up there, there was about half a dozen guys, they were bringing up there by the case, see? And they were signing for it. So at that time, it was $12, 2 bits a bottle, that's about $12 a case, eh? $6 a case. Yeah, 2 bits a bottle, $6 a case. That's what they were, 2 bits a bottle. And we always stay down to our two, but these guys was getting down to a case. So one day Hornsby had a meeting, and he says, Hemsley and Mr. Newsom, he says, we don't mind paying for your food, he says, but if you're going to bring guests to the hotel and feed them, expect the ball club to pay for them, he says, I don't think that's right. He says, you guys, we was allowed the $4.50 or $5 a day then, see? And these guys were eating $8 and $9 a day, see? $6 was beer. So Horseman never did find out, and he just told him to cut it out, you know. If you bring a friend in, you pay for his meal. The club shouldn't pay for his meal. And there weren't meals, there was just beer. So he'd sign one day, the other guy signed the other day. We was getting the bottle of beer, and these guys were getting by the case, see.
You call him Mr. Hemsley, Mr.?
Well, you know, Buck or whatever it was, but.
Buck Wilson.
Yeah, Buck, a wild Bobo. Oh, he had some good days. I know, yeah. Hornsby had a rule one time, if you had two strikes on a batter and he'd hit a 2-0 pitch and get a base hit, cost you $25. Of course, $25, they made a lot of money. So Buck Newsom had two strikes on a guy, and he, sort of high outside pitch, and this guy reaches out for it. It wasn't a good pitch, but he reached out and slapped it in the right field for a base hit. Cost Buck $25. So every time Buck got ahead of a man, two strikes and no balls, he'd hit the grandstand when there was nobody on base. He'd make sure he wasn't going to hit it. Because, you know, you can pitch a ball bad. Oh, a guy still can reach out and reach. Hit it, you know. Be lucky enough to get a base hit, cost you $25. So that's how early he was. He was strict as a dickens.
How about, was Blayholder still with you?
George was with us. George Blayholder was one of us. One of our pitchers, yeah. Oh, slow going, slow. He's from the south side.
Like?
He was happy-go-lucky. He was like a loner. Then we had another guy, I can't think of his name, but he was heavy drinker. And Hornsby would always say, if you want to drink, he says, drink in your room. He said, don't go out where the public can see you, you know. And he says, you want to go drink because you had a bad day? He says, go out by yourself because nobody knows you. Don't go out with your friend you think is your friend, because he's the first guy calls the front office the following day. He says, he was out with you, he was out with you. And he as the complaining, you know, which made sense.
Was there much drinking in your time?
Well, it wasn't, no, not excessive, but I mean, some guys would. You had one or two on a club would probably overdo it, because there's nothing wrong with having a drink. I mean, a beer especially, because I didn't drink the booze, I just drank beer myself. But some of these guys would drink that stuff, and they had a bad day, probably like what they say, when it drowns your sorrows, I guess, or something like that. And, no,
you
that wasn't...
the ballpark that way?
Oh, no, no, no. I never saw any of them come out that way. No, not to the ballpark, no. But you go to work in during 29, 30, and 31, I was playing, that was prohibition, you know. So there was no drinking at all. Of course, you get a bottle of home brew somewhere. You always find out you get a bottle of home brew, you know.
Yeah,
we used to go, when I was at Quincy in the Three I League, my brother was over there. He come paid me a visit. We used to go across into this guy. He wrote a story about the guy on a white on a fence. What was his name?
Tom Sawyer.
Yeah. What was his name? A little town.
Hannibal.
That's right. Right across the river, Hannibal, Missouri. Right across the river from Quincy. We used to go to Hannibal and had a couple of bottles of beer after it was after the ball game. We'd ride a ferry across, you know. But other than that, I didn't too much drinking.
Jack Burns.
Jack Burns is the first baseman, yeah. See, you remember that name better than I do, guy. I'm trying to say, he was in Boston. Jack, yeah.
What about him?
Well, he was a quiet guy. He had a boy, but I had my girl at that time. And he was a good first baseman. Jack was a good hustler, too. He was all right. And and Hemsley again now in St. Louis, he dressed up. The reason they call him Hobo, the way I understand, he had a brand new suit of clothes on. By the time he'd come back, he looked like a mama. I don't know what he'd do with himself.
Hobo,
that's what they call him, Hobo. Did you hear? Oh, yeah, that's Hobo. And one time he had a brand new car, and I don't know, a post or something got in his way, and his daughter came over and told my daughter, a telephone post got in my daddy's way. That's how it was. That's why he hit the post. Somebody got in his way. But, that's how they call him, Hobo. He could be dressed up, and the next day the suit wouldn't look the same.
Another name I always was fascinated by was Storty.
Storty. Glenn, yeah, he was there before me, I think.
Before you.
Yeah, Storty was before me, yeah.
I guess Levy and Storty were...
Yeah, they were there about the time, yeah.
Levy played football, didn't he?
Yeah, I can't recall him playing football, but he went to school somewhere, I don't know. I don't know what school he went to. But that was quite a town, St. Louis.
How about some of these fellows up in St. Paul? Up there.
Well, George Washington. Well, he played with the White Sox, and he could swing that bat pretty good, you know. In fact, they had a little fence along the right field foul line around the dugout, where the people in the box seat are always lifted up, maybe about a foot and a half high, because he had a tendency to let go of the bat, and it always wind up in the box seats. So, Mr. Schultz called me about that. He asked me, do you remember that little fence they used to raise up every time George come to bat? I said, I certainly do. Every time you come to bat, because he threw a lot of bats got away on him. He took a swish.
What ballpark was that in St. Paul?
That was the old Lexington ballpark in Lexington.
Is that a very good park?
It was 320-something to right to the left field. They had a skating rink. It was like a pavilion, about 350, 60 in left center. 370 something in right field.
Where was the skating rink?
Huh? Where
was the skating rink?
There was a skating rink and a roller rink too, in left center field in Lexington Park and St. Paul.
It was kind of an amusement park. Was
yeah.
It?
Well, no. That was a boundary line, I guess, as far as they could go. That pavilion probably was there before the ballpark, or vice versa. That's as far as they could go. Then you just hit them on top of the pavilion. Ted Williams was in Minneapolis when I was playing ball there, and he used to hit them either way. And if you remember Nicollet Park in Minneapolis, that was 270 feet.
Oh, yeah, right.
The first time I went over there, Hump Pierce, he was our trainer in September already. Somebody must have been practicing football out there, see, because they had headgear in the lockers. I said, what's this headgear doing in my lockers? Well, Ollie said, you use that in the right field. You're playing right field today. So he took me out and showed me why. Because he said, every time somebody hit the line drive, you turn around, you got concrete, see? So you beat your brains out. And I didn't believe that sucker because he was 22, you know. But I mean, you can see it was logical. But there's only 270 feet. They had about a 40-foot screen on there, see? And they had nine left-hand hitters. Donnie Bush was managing in 1929 over there. Nine left-hand hitters in there. All they had to hit without a fist, it was a two-base hit off that screen, you know.
Like Joe Hauser hit a lot of homers.
60. Oh, I imagine. But Joe was a pretty good hitter, too. Joe hit 60. Joe and I was to a banquet, an old timers banquet in Milwaukee last November, I believe it was. Yeah, we was a couple of big leaguers were hosts over there. We sat at the main table, and Joe hit 69, I believe, over there 1 year.
I was just a kid reading the sporting news in those days, and I was just amazed at all those home runs.
Yeah, he hit 69. Well, I mean, now you know Ted Williams could hit him out of any ballpark, and he didn't hit that many over there. But some of them that he hit was across the street or across the buildings and everything else over there. But yet, you think the way he could swish that bat, of course he hit the all fields too. But he only hit 40-some that year.
Wasn't Hauser up longer in a big time?
I don't know. He was with Philadelphia, wasn't he, or somewhere?
He had some good years in the early 20s.
I was going to say, with Philadelphia, I think, if I remember correctly.
Something went wrong. I guess maybe his arm.
Maybe his fielding or something like that. I don't know. But I remember Joe,
he still hit, though.
Yes, he could.
Fabian Gaffke?
Yeah, he was a guy who was being honored that day that we were there. Nice. Yeah, he was being honored that day.
I was intrigued by that name.
Fabian Gaffke. Yeah, he was in Cleveland for a while. Yeah. Yeah, he was a guy that the Old Timers Association honored.
What's with that
Old Timers
thing, brother? That invitation.
Okay. I'm gonna have to send Nick over there now. He just received a letter tonight. That's Wisconsin. They got 5,000 members. Because they take in semi-pros too, you know.
Oh, they have it. Connected with the old ball player?
Yeah, that could be. That could be Bobby Brothers. Yeah. Well, here's what they have over there, see?
Yeah.
I was there for the first time with that, and I introduced myself after the meeting was over, and they gave me help because I should have introduced myself before that, see? So then they invited me to this, they have a banquet. This is a shindig with the boys, you see?
Yeah.
If you got your $2 dues paid up, you get all the beer, all the eat you want for nothing, see? Then later on, it was $12.50 for a ticket. Then they had a VIP room, you know. There's a Joe Kruger, president. Bill Lazarus, the secretary.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got Hank Aaron, and they got a whole
wonderful
list full of big league names that's on the board of directors, you know, see? And they usually have this at the, what do they call it? Mr. Aloysius, I don't know.
Were you ever called that at home?
No.
School or anything?
No. They called me Allo. Allo, that's all. Allo, I don't know how to spell Allo. So they changed it to Ollie somehow.
Yeah, when was this? In school?
In school, running around here in the fields, yeah. See, nobody could spell Aloysius anyway, them days.
Well, Al Simmons.
Al Simmons, he had that name too, but they called him Al. I went down to Ollie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, Chet Lebs and all them guys come from Milwaukee. They got quite an organization. It's really something.
His labs live up there now?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'd go to Milwaukee, shouldn't I?
Yeah, sir. You get a lot of them there. Well, Al Simmons, he's dead.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. They got a book. They got a book out over here for the minor league ball players.
Just got over. There's
a gas right there.
Oh, me.
That's the program.
Oh.
I think I could. Find it.
You didn't get any more copies of this, did you?
Yeah, I got two of them. There's Fabian Gaffke right now.
Yeah.
They honor the old timers. This guy's sitting at the main table, see?
Oh, yeah.
here's a Halsey Hall was over there from Minneapolis.
Yeah, you listened to him.
Here's what they call him, Unser Choke, see?
Unser Joe. I wonder what that's for. Our Joe.
I don't know, Unser, that would be uncle.
No, it's in German, it's
our. Unser, yes, that's our
so
Joe.
You say Joe in German, I guess
that's
Joe.
Choke, yeah. Bruce Fleming.
Dave May.
He's played ball with Milwaukee now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really gone big with that over there. Here's your board of directors. Look at there.
Yeah.
There's Hank Aaron on there, see him?
Oh, yeah.
Tony Kubek Jr. Yeah. This is really good here.
Can you have a spare copy of this?
Yeah, you can
have it. Hey, thanks very much.
Did you switch that tape?
Yeah.
Look at this. Standing Lot Baseball, south side of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
You got Chet Lebs there. There's Kenny Keltner. Yeah, he's there. Kenny was at the banquet.
Wow, I
I have to get a copy of this. I wonder
who
puts this out.
I got it with the old-timers. Here's, I'll show you about Al Simmons.
Why didn't you write to the old-timers?
Yeah, they'll probably get you.
I'll get a copy of that.
It's 1920, is it? 1928? Merchant Al. Oh, Merchants All. These are probably sponsors.
Yeah.
They got a real winner. Dips. Larry Dips. Here's Al.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It doesn't say when he died. Does he say that?
Yeah, May 26, 1956, 4 days after his 54th birthday.
Oh, that?
Yeah, 1956, it's 18 years ago. He would be 72 now.
Yeah.
4 days after his fourth birthday. There's here's Connie Mack, see? Dedication day. L. Simmons. There's an old ball player. Yeah, I was going to say, that was an old man, an old ball player. There's what I honored L. Al Simmons Field.
Did you know him pretty well?
No, I didn't know Al too well, no. Now here's what Al looked like when he was playing center from 1920. Yeah, they got Chet Labs in here too someplace.
Yeah, yeah. He's a little bit later than you.
Yeah.
Labs has a tremendous minor leaguer, never did much in the big
league. Too much, no.
Let me just do a jot down where this
guy Yeah, ask him to send you one. Yeah, we had more fun playing, I think, them days than they have now. I don't know. Just like this man over, just like Charlie Schultz sells over the telephone. He says, Ollie, he says, they took the game away from the people, he says. Now they build these huge stadiums, he says, and you sit two blocks away from it and you watch the action. He says, it's not like it was in St. Paul. You know, you could touch the ball players or anybody was there.
Did you ever play in Redbird Stadium in Columbus?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I played Redbird Stadium in Columbus, Ohio, sure. Yeah, that was. I played them. Well, they got one in Rochester too. Don't they call it a Cardinal?
I think it's Red Wing Stadium.
Red Wing, yeah.
Silver Stadium now.
Yeah. Renamed. Oh yeah, Columbus, sure.
But we've seen a lot of ball games.
I played in the old ballpark there too, 1929 when I first started out.
What kind of a ballpark?
Neil's Park.
Yeah.
I think there was a prisoner, Ohio State prisoner, was behind it or something. You can see the guards walking the hall. That's the only time I played. It was 1929. Once or twice they went in there, because I joined them in June. I think we made one trip through there. I can
just
deal.
Much of a park, I guess.
No, it wasn't. There wasn't. No, it wasn't.
That new one was great.
It was real
Didn't
nice.
You like that?
A real nice ballpark. Yeah.
Is that Jet Stadium?
Yeah, it's Jet Stadium.
Oh, and it's so sad.
The Cardinals sold in 54, I think. They transferred to Omaha, their franchise.
Yeah. There's nobody in Columbus, though.
Well, the people in Columbus, the Columbus Civic Group, bought it. It was municipally owned and operated for about 15 or 16 more years, and they renamed the club the Jets, and the team, the stadium, the Jet Stadium. And then in 69, they just gave up. They were losing so much. And they transferred to Charleston, West Virginia, which is about 80 miles from us, and we get down there a lot. So
yeah, I see. That's association or international?
That's international.
That's international, I see.
And Jet Stadium has just gone to sea.
It's just gone to sea. Beautiful ballpark. That's right. Yes, sir.
Did you ever play in Charleston at all, West Virginia?
Exhibition game.
What ballpark were you in?
Senator
Field.
St. Louis Browns was coming through there.
I thought there was. Where's that?
What?
I thought what ballpark was
there? Oh, ballpark was built in 1947, you wouldn't have played there.
It's a nice little ballpark.
That's a new one,
though. Yeah. Powell was the big baseball man there, the name of that.
Who was it?
His name was Powell.
Oh, Powell. Not Jake.
Not like Jake. Did you know Jake?
Oh, sure.
Tell me some stories about Jake.
Well, I played against Jake, but I heard about him. That's all I know.
I saw him get a seizure on the league park there in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Sciatic attacks. He had to carry him off the field.
Yeah, right.
He wants to know some
He was a character.
Him.
Oh, he was a character. Yes. I mean, all you know is what you read in the paper. You know, once in a while, I got in trouble with swinging bats at some of these guys, you know. Oh, they had some characters.
Yeah.
Who was the, Name some more characters. Well,
Lloyd Brown, you remember Lloyd Brown? He was at Cleveland.
Was he?
Yeah. Well, he was in St. Paul. No, he was no character, but he was in St. Paul. And, Bill Swift, he played with me in St. Paul. He was in Pittsburgh, I believe, through in his career. But he was in the Three I League too by the time we was there. Hank Greenberg and those guys was coming through at the same time. Jerry Walker one time, he's leading the league, I guess, around July 4th. I think he had 50-some stolen bases. And he was stealing the base, I guess, it was either second or third. I think he was stealing third base. They were way ahead. He wasn't playing against us. But I remember reading the paper where somebody stole the base and he was stealing another base, where it didn't mean nothing, you know. And he broke his leg. That was Hub, not Gerald, it was Hub Walker. He broke his leg. Them guys could steal bases.
I thought you were going to tell a story about Jerry Walker stealing a base and swallowing a plug of tobacco between the bases and practically screaming on the baseline.
You probably heard this story about why did it take a runner longer to go from second to third dust from first to second? The bases are 90 feet apart, right?
Yeah.
Yet it takes a runner longer to go from second to third dust from first to second. Well, you know why? There's a short stop in between second and third.
What did Walker boys like?
They were all right. Yeah. Well, Hub was on the quiet side. Jerry was more aggressive. I know Jerry in Detroit one time, bases full, two outs, 3-2. He bunted on our pitcher and got away with it. Now who in the world looking for a bunt 3-2, two outs? And he's bunting. Everybody's running with the pitch. Made a good bunt. Of course, he could have fouled it off, you know. That's the kind of guy he was. He'd do, always do it unexpected. Yeah, Hubby was that. But, Gerald was more aggressive than Hubby.
Did you know Babe Ruth?
Well, I didn't know him real well. I had the pleasure of playing against that one year, 1934. After that, he went to Boston, I guess, in 35 or something. I bet you got a lot of stories from Stanley, eh?
he's very, very sharp.
Yes, sir.
And so is she.
82, I guess. That's his second wife, I believe.
Yeah.
I think that's his wife's sister, I believe.
Yeah, that's what she told us.
I think that's what it is, yeah.
Yeah,
he came here in 1928. That's what, 46 years ago.
Won't your wife come in and talk
about it? Come on, Clara.
I'd like to get her, too. She's got some good stories.
That's what I said. I felt we had chased her out. She doesn't want him to take.
Hi.
Hello.
You're going to have to give me your names again, though.
Murdoch.
Murdoch. That's right.
Yeah.
This is my wife, Clara.
So happy.
I'm Peg Murdoch. Hi. Yeah, I thought we chased you out of here when we came.
You want to find
out when why is he staying in the kitchen?
You want to find out when you got married, what it was like being
We got married in 28.
In the kitchen.
Well, that's where I usually live, too.
Yeah, did you travel around much with your husband when he was playing ball? Did you?
Just wherever he played.
Did you go on the road at all? Or?
No.
Once you did.
Just once.
Was that a lot of fun? Or?
Well,
the bus, Three I League.
Oh, I see.
It's no fun, I'll guarantee you that. Now it would be a lot of fun, I imagine.
I don't know, though.
The children are grown up.
Oh, now, yeah, when your children
when they were
there.
Small.
Well, tell them you never called me daddy.
Well, I always... No, they never called you by your name.
She never called us. Because I had a bad day, you know, to pick on her.
Oh, I
see. He said, I never sat in the... I always sat in the stands
with the rest of the
fans, and if he was up to bat, why, they never said daddy. They always said Ollie.
Isn't that funny? Mrs. Kobolewski never sat. She always sat in the stands, too.
I never sat.
She didn't want to be with the wives. She told me that.
With the children, it was safer to sit... There wasn't a box seat, because you never know when there'd be a foul, and then first thing you know, the children are playing, they're not sitting there and watching the game. So I had hands full.
Did you get nervous when your husband was batting?
Not very much. Sometimes I'd always sit there and listen to where everybody's talking.
Did that bother you?
No, I just sat there and I said, already, if you'd only know who's sitting over here and listening to it.
You wouldn't be saying those things.
Did it bother you having her in the stands at all? Or
no.
About that?
We used to go to a tavern after a ball game in St. Paul. We went to more than half the season, didn't we?
More than half the season.
And nobody knew us. Nobody knew us. Like I told you, it's my best to go where nobody knows. You can have a couple, three glasses of beer with your family and just go home. Yeah. Or otherwise, there's always somebody wants to buy you one. You know, buy you one. And mm-hmm. He's the guy who's going to be the first one to call up the following day, you know, bragging he was out with you and got you drunk. Mm-hmm. So we were sitting there. We was in the playoffs, weren't they? One time with this guy at the, well, they always paid 15 cents or two bits for the tax on it. They had to pay the tax on it. And this guy at the pass gate comes in. He says, "Hello, Mrs. Bayman. Hello, Wally." You know, it's like that. And there was 8 or 10 people down there, and we got 8 or 10 beers. Nobody ever bought us a drink. They're all something wrong. Until this one night. And they all come over there and talk to us. They all start buying us drinks. That was the last time I was there.
We'd sit there. We'd get enjoy it because the girls at that time, they understand. We'd sit in the booth and they would talk about him and about the ball players. And
the guys after the game, you know.
And they'd say, "Daddy,
make different comments."
He says, "Yeah." So we'd just real quiet and we'd be listening. So everything was all right until that one night. That one night came around and I said, "This is it. No more." After that, we never did go back. I did go with him to a dance. That was at the Big Wheel.
Oh, yeah, somewhere, yeah.
And we were dancing. And we were dancing, and the first thing you know, I noticed the fella recognized him. Mm-hmm. And they started talking. So I told him, I said, "Well, let's go." Mm-hmm. So we did, went to our table, finished our drink, and walked out.
But we sat in this place, that one tavern, where there's different comments after games. Like I say, one day you're a hero, next day you're a bum. It's what them guys do lead the league, the way they play tonight, you know. So you have a bad day, but same people. Like I say, they pat you on the back one day and kick you in the butt the next, you know.
Do you have a pretty thick skin for that
guy? Oh, yeah, it isn't like me.
How are the sports writers?
See, he said, "Look, I sat in the stands. I could hear everything.
I could give no reason to
hear what they talk about him and what they talk about all the ball players."
I got scrapbooks over here to change.
And I knew
the way Ollie goes, that's the way the club goes. You know what? Because I was going good, you know.
And they had a bad night.
They never gave me going over.
When they started speaking on them, that was it.
I had my own business. I kept my nose clean.
How many children do you have?
I have 3. 2 girls and... Well, the girls really did get the ones that really enjoyed the
his
playing
was
because
young.
The boy
He was 3 years old.
Right.
Well, he still remembers running around the bases in Buffalo.
He remembers that.
He was 3 years old.
Are they married now?
No, he's in Milwaukee. One of them.
Yeah, the girls. Yeah, I have
12
married, 12 grandchildren.
Oh my!
Did you play in an old office?
Off of it, yeah, that's right. We had a man over here the other day. She sees a friend of mine over here, about a block away from the tavern. And he comes and sees him, see? And they both, one of them comes from Duluth, and he comes from Buffalo, here during the Depression, and met here in South Bend one time on some kind of a job. They was building a building or something. Or they were tearing up bowling alleys. They was moving bowling alleys. That's what they were doing. That's how they met. They've been friends ever since. Waters Recreation. That's about 150 years ago. They're both in the 70s now. And we were just talking about Offerman Stadium. It comes to me like that. Sometimes you want to think you can't think of it. The next time it comes to you like that.
I saw a doubleheader there.
That was a nice ballpark.
1946 Declaration Day, the only time I was there.
Yeah.
I thought it was a nice
ballpark. Nice ballpark, yes. Offerman
what was
Stadium.
The nicest park you played in? The minor leagues.
In the minor leagues. Kansas City wasn't a bad ballpark. Indianapolis, a new ballpark. Indianapolis is a nice ballpark.
Was that the one there now? Is that?
That's the one. That's the one there
Bush
now.
Field,
that's right, Donnie Bush Field. The one I broke in on was on Washington Street, but it's across the street from a streetcar barn over there. That's the one I broke in at. And I never played in this other one because I was gone 1930. They were still playing in the old one. This would come up about 32, 33.
Donnie Bush is a newer one.
Yeah, Donnie Bush is a new one. Yeah, it's on the north side, northwest side of the town.
Yeah.
The other one was right straight down Washington Street, about maybe 6 blocks from the Marina.
Was that a pretty good park where you're speaking of the newer one?
The newer one. No, the other one was just a wooden ballpark. The first one was, just a wooden ballpark. Yeah. The Louisville ballpark was a nice ballpark.
How about the Sportsman's Park?
In St. Louis?
Like that,
Well, it's, it was an old ballpark down here on the old side. They didn't have no just head bandstands all the way around down the right field line and down the left field line and center field, right field, it was just nothing but bleachers.
Were the facilities very good there? I mean, like locker room, showers?
Yeah, too hot. We used to go, I used to crawl upstairs all the time. Yeah, not too hot. They were old. But the new ones is real good. And by the way, I played in the old timers game in 1967. That was my last ball game. In Bloomington, Minnesota. They had the old-time Saints play the old-time Minneapolis Millers. And we had Marty Stratton over there. That's after he shot his leg off. Well, he pitched that guy. That's the year I joined the White Sox in 39. He shot his leg off December 38, I believe it was. Yeah. He was pitching batting practice for a 39 season. But he come over there and played, and he and Art Herring played. And Tony Giuliani. I think he's in some capacity with the Twins. I think he's a coach or something. But he played because he used to play with the Saints. And we had one guy there, 73 years old, played third base. He said, don't hit the ball third base because you might kill him. You know, he was and Oscar Rutger, he was playing first base for us. Oscar was there when Ben Chapman was there in 1929. He was with the St. Paul Saints. He lives in St. Louis now. And Williams played center field for us because Williams at one time played for St. Paul. Boston was in town in 1967, you know, Yastrzemski wasn't playing, I didn't get a chance to see him play. But, yeah, we had something like 29, 30,000 people, so we packed him in pretty good. But we only played three innings. I struck out the first time. The next time I got a base hit, the guy after me got a base hit, I go from first to second, and the next guy bunted, see, because it wasn't nothing, I guess, at the time. Guy bunted the ball, I'm running third base, I'm hollering, third, him, the pitcher, the third baseman, are picking the ball up, they turn around, throw it third base, they throw it left field, I'm running all the way home. Laughing like, yep.
Why do you keep in such good shape?
But
you're looking great.
I just feel fine. I bowl and play golf. I bowl once a week, and golf once a week sometimes. I was up to 202 pounds one time. And that's after I quit smoking. See, I weighed about 180. I weighed about 75 strip now. And I weighed 202 pounds. I said, my God. So every Lent, I'm a Catholic, every Lent come around, I quit drinking beer, see. And in 6 weeks' time, I lose anywhere over 10, 12 pounds, you know, see. And every Lent come around, I lose. I did that for about 15 years. I didn't do it this year. My wife said, you're skinny enough the way it is. Why should you lose some more weight? I'll probably lose about 5 pounds, you know. But that's how I come back down, see. But I was 202 pounds when I seen that on a scale, I nearly died. But I played, my playing was more or less 165, 170, see. Then when I got older, I think I got up to 175.
Did you have any trouble getting in shape?
No. The first year, I think I overdid it, though. When I was, they sent me to, like I told you before, the Browns got a hold of me in 33. Birmingham bought me, see. Southerly. That's when Dizzy Dean was with Houston. I forget who was managed in Birmingham. Oh yeah, Clyde. He stole all the bases for Washington.
Milan.
Clyde Milan, that's the guy. And he caught me sliding, you know. He said, boy, you don't slide that way. I went straight out, see. Yeah, this one, see. He said, you always have this one loose like a hinge. He said, it's something, see, it'll give, see. Well, nobody taught you in the minor leagues how to slide, you know. So he caught me doing that. And I refer going down there because I couldn't stay. Because at that time, they had a rookie. We had to keep five rookies, I guess you had to keep, see? And if you was at bat in the association, which was hired in Southern Association, I was a AAA. I think I was at bat in 1929, something like 80 or 90 times. If you was at bat over 50 or 60, you was a regular, see? That's why they couldn't kick me as a rookie. And they won the pennant there the following year, too. But they liked me, but I mean, they couldn't keep me, see? They had to carry five rookies. So then I come back to Quincy. That was 1932. That's when I had a good year. That's when the St. Louis Browns got me. They sent me to St. Texas League. But all in all, it was quite an ordeal. Like I say, it was in the... See, I had more fun playing ball, I think, than they have now. I don't know.
What did you do in the off-season?
The off-season? Yeah. My brother and I opened up a tavern over here in 1935. And we was in there until now. And
you still have it?
No, up until now. And he got too old, you know. And then when I quit playing ball, I went to Studebaker's to work. I was a Studebaker until they closed up here in 1963. After 63, I was in playing politics a little bit, you know, and I got a job with the state as a driver examiner. I was there for 5 or 6 years until they changed governors, you know, and you got kicked. When the governor got kicked out, you got kicked out. But I did some papers for friends of mine, and due to hire for American Motors over here. We had a plant, American Motors had a plant, was making army trucks, you know. But I was down in the basement making little boxes, you know, for shipping and stuff like that. And I was there for practically 4 years. I get to be 72, I was 65, and I quit the first of 1973. I've been out since then.
So, did you do much hunting in Austria?
Oh, I did. Not no more, no. I did. Oh, geez, they used to get up 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Who you go hunting with?
Well, I used to go with, old timers over here. We call old timers Joe Baker. He's about in Seminole, that's all. Stanley knows, well, Stanley pitched to him too. But up until the last, now you got too much hunting grounds around here, you know what I mean? Everything is being built in. They don't want you to hunt here, they want you to hunt there. You can't hunt nowhere around here. Although I did go 1 year for deer hunting up in Canada. And we didn't shoot no deer because the guy I was with, you had to get a deer at a certain time because he had to come back. I was in that woods.
Excuse me, that was your daughter.
Which one?
You were supposed to go watch your grandson.
Oh, play ball. Yeah, he's got a game at 5:30. Are they playing? Are they playing?
Oh, they're having a...
Are they playing?
You listen to her. They don't know. They're
playing right down the street.
This manager that...
St. James
is running around like mad looking for a diamond to play. So
again?
No, see, they're the umpire, the main one.
Yeah.
He's the one that said that they can't play.
They can't play over here?
Because of the race? It's Saturday.
Yeah.
How could he, what rights did he have to run around looking for?
How about today?
So they ran over there, and he's over there today, too, to see if that diamond is
playable.
If it is, they'll find.
Yeah, I was supposed to go see him play at 5:30. Because as a rule, I bowl on Monday nights, but today the season's over, so I'm all done.
And she's so nervous, she says she's not going. Because otherwise you go, she's so nervous, she's not.
Well, when I get done eating, I'll go watch him. He's 14.
He's 14.
He's 8th grade at the Christ the King. He wants to be a shortstop, but he can throw the ball pretty good, you know, they make a pitcher out of it. You know, if anybody can throw hard, they want to make a pitcher out of it, you know.
Oh.
And they're fighting for the championship, and they're playing St. Cashmere's over here, about a half a mile down the street. And these guys come from Roseland over here, north.
Oh.
And they're playing, they got a chance to tie them or something, see. They wanted to play it Friday or Saturday. Yeah, they wanted to play Saturday. Saturday all day it rained over here.
Oh.
Yeah, it was unplayable. And my son-in-law was taking the kids to bowl. They went to Bloomington, Indiana. Where Indiana, you had a bunch of kids from over here. I belong to the Polish Falcons, see. And we had 40 kids on a bus going there to bowl, junior bowlers, you know, see. So that's my son-in-law took his bowlers down there, too. And they wanted to play in the worst way, see, because they know he had a lead for Bloomington. And he wanted to get out because it was money. It was money.
Yeah.
So they finally called off. He left at 1 o'clock instead of 2.
He played little. He was.
But we never.
You have any children, dude?
We got two.
Two boys, girls.
Girl 19, boy 22.
Uh huh.
She's up at Hillsdale College. We're gonna pick her up in a couple of days.
I see.
Could you sit on the couch for a moment for a picture?
Yeah,
the two of you?
I don't take good pictures at all.
Well, that's all right. But he'll catch you up.
Oh, you sound just like me.
He'll catch you up.
I don't take good pictures at all. I don't like to take pictures.
Well, I know. But
that's why my grandchildren, they take pictures of me when I'm not looking.
Oh, yeah.
We're supposed to be looking.
I never do.
Thank you very much.
Isn't that
I still get kids who want autographs, you know, so I got some pictures of a bust on me.
I wanted to ask you, Mrs. Bayman, were you from South Bend yourself?
Or? Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. And where did you two meet?
I have a sister married to his brother.
Older brother.
Two sisters
brother married to
two
brothers.
Isn't that nice?
And that's how we met.
Yeah, makes it nice.
Stanley Kowalski marries his...
Yeah, his sister's, first wife's sister.
Yeah, see, I want you to sign this. Yes. This was of the White Sox.
White Sox,
yeah.
Well, but it's a championship game. Anyway.
What's your first name?
Your daughter's up
Jean.
Jean. Jean.
Well, she said it would be so bad as this coach. He's such a, he's like what they, I call him, a cutthroat. He's out there to win. And this grandson of mine is so mad. I said, gee, I said, Joanna, I said, I hope he doesn't. And she said, he's so mad. He's about ready to beat every one of them. I said, I hope not. Yeah, it's a poor sportsmanship because he doesn't, it's, the children see this and they hear everything he says, and it's not nice.
That's right.
It's thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome.
Appreciate
it. You want to see some trophies I got for Bono there?
Yeah,
I
bet.
So
that's where I think we're keeping it for a moment.
We're just talking ourselves, woman talk.
Yeah,
this is not for that.
Like being a baseball
no,
wife.
I told him that that's talking, I'm not going.
But, well, that's what I do. I just, you know, I don't think, you know, let him carry on. But we had to go, he had to go to a convention up in,
you mean all these are shy?
London, Ontario.
Oh,
and since our daughter was almost ready to come home, he thought he'd go and see some old ball players. We left there yesterday, and he'd see some old ball players, and then we picked her up on Wednesday. How could you do that?
It must be. I don't know.
You're just not very well organized here.
What is that, a 120?
Do you have any cash tube?
It's just our little old thing here.
This is the American Association.